Welcome to the Hearts of Oak podcast. Hearts of Oak is a populist free speech alliance that seeks to push back the cultural Marxism that pervades all areas of our society. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and an open and free discussion on any topic are the bedrocks to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Good evening, Hearts of Oak. Thank you so much for joining us once again on a pre-record. And it is my pleasure to have Jamie Glazoff joining me. Jamie, thank you so much for joining us from all the way across the pond.
What an honor and privilege to be here. Thank you, Peter.
It's wonderful to have you. And if I can just, first of all, a number of things, we'll put up where the viewers can find you. JimmyGlazoff.com is your website, at Jamie Glazoff on Twitter, and the Glazoff Gang, obviously on Rumble. We'll maybe mention that a little bit later, that you have moved the focus over to Rumble, all your videos. And of course, Front Page Magazine, frontpagemag.com, and we had the honor of having David Horowitz a few weeks ago. So thank you. That's where people can find, and certainly Front Page Magazine has been somewhere that I have looked for inspiration over the last couple of years, probably 5-6 years, to understand Islam. So it is a fantastic resource, and I encourage our viewers to go and have a look at that. But if I can just do a very quick few lines introduction, and then I'll pass it over to you, Jamie. Jamie, you hold a PhD in history with a specialty in Russian, US, and Canadian foreign policy. You're the editor of Front Page Magazine, the author of the critically acclaimed United in Hate, The Left's Romance with Tyranny and Terror, and the host of the show The Glazoff Gang. Your new book, your latest book, it was 3 years ago, came out, is Jihadist Psychopath, How He is Charming, Seducing, and Devouring Us. And I've put the links up where people can find you. So, Jamie, thank you so much for being with us. And could I ask you just to take a few minutes and just introduce yourself to our viewers before we get into the huge issues that America is currently facing?
Well, thank you, Peter. I appreciate that introduction. Sometimes it's hard to know where to start or what to say, so I've learned to maybe just talk from my heart and briefly. My parents were dissidents in the Soviet Union, very, very courageous people who stood up against the Soviet Empire. My dad says that from the moment when he was just a little kid, he knew that he was born in a slave camp. Wow. And when my dad was growing up, he used to study maps, trying to figure out how he could escape the Soviet Union. And it means a lot to me. My dad means a lot to me. My mom means a lot to me to take a stand in an evil empire and to do what they did, really risking the gulag. And to make a long story short, we were persecuted Christians. My parents, you know, supported prisoners of conscience. My dad signed petition against the invasion of Czechoslovakia, and he stood up for Andrei Sakharov and persecuted people. A lot more to say on that. But we were very fortunate because many people that were on that side and were in the circle of my parents ended up in the gulag. This is a very long story, but we were very fortunate to get out. And we got out, and we ended up in the United States. And as a kid, I was just five and a half years old, and my mom says that my jaw was just dropped standing in front of McDonald's and Burger King and stores. And I remember that time, briefly. I was a kid, but I still remember the oxygen of freedom. And also, of course, having toys and all the things that America came with. It was just amazing. I mean, till this day, I have to say, I'm still amazed going to grocery stores and shopping centers and seeing the abundance of capitalism and freedom. Because my early childhood, the memories of standing in long lines and also waiting for that knock on the door. And so that made a huge impression on me. And I loved America, and I love America, and I love freedom. And as I was growing older we were in the U.S. We also moved up to Canada, a wonderful country as well. Very grateful to Canada. And as I grew older, there was these species of people that were yelling at my parents, at my father, telling him he's a fascist, telling him he's a racist. Stop talking like that, Yuri, because where you're from is a beautiful place. And you're in the real oppressive society now. And Castro is such a good man, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I remember from a young age, I really hated those people. And I know that as Christians, maybe hate is a strong word, but I'm just being honest, you know, and I can work on that. But I began to analyze these people. I began to study them. Why do these people want to create a system and bring an ideology and system here that's the most evil thing in the world, and they themselves will perish under it? Some kind of suicide impulse there. And I dedicated my life to studying the left and fighting the left till the end of my days. And I'll do it till my dying breath, because it's a diabolical evil entity. Stemming back to the Garden of Eden and what happened there. And I remember after 9/11, when Bush sent the troops over to Afghanistan and Iraq, whether it was the right or wrong thing to do is another matter. But I'll never forget the feminists and the anti-war demonstrations marching alongside Islamists screaming, Allahu Akbar. And I remember watching that thinking, if those people come to power, and if there was no one around, you would be dead within 30 seconds. And so I dedicated my life after that, in the sense of like rededicated to writing my book, United in Hate. Then later, Jihad is Psychopath. So that's a little bit of the background, Peter. Thank you so much. It's the story of the child of Soviet immigrants who loved the oxygen of freedom and wants to protect it from the people that want to suffocate freedom. And we thought we escaped the Soviet Union, but today the Soviet Union has come to us.
It's been a privilege of mine, certainly working with Lord Pearson for many years, and he was a good friend of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and worked a lot with Soviet dissidents in the 70s and early 80s, getting them out. So I think it is vital that we understand that those of us who have been born and grew up in the West have no idea the evils of communism. So I think it's vital that your story of understanding the evils from that regime needs to be told. So thank you certainly for doing that. The Glazov gang is something that I've watched regularly. It's been 8 years now. And do you want to just let us know what led you to start that back in 2013? What did you want to achieve? What was your aim in doing that?
Well, thank you so much. There's a couple ingredients there. One ingredient is that when I was 7 and 8, 9 years old, I was pretending I was David Brinkley, and I was taping shows where I was David Brinkley and asking George Will and Pat Buchanan and different guests their opinions on things, and I would tape this. So from the time I was a kid, it was my dream to host a show and have a discussion, you know? So I just want to start with that. I also sat at a table, my dad and my mom's table, for which I'm grateful for the rest of my life and for all eternity. The household that we had, that my dad and my mom nurtured, always such fascinating, interesting discussions. The people that my parents brought into our home and the discussions that we had was such a priceless and divine gift to me, and I'm very grateful to that. And so I love that environment. I cherish the environment of talking about history or the arts or about life, and to do so in a free manner. And as I grew older, I would always sit in front of the TV thinking, why didn't he ask that? Why didn't they invite them? How come they didn't ask that? He should have asked that. Hey, wait a minute. If they're talking about Islam, how come they haven't asked what the sources of jihad are? How come they don't have Robert Spencer on? How come they don't have this person on? So I found that the boundaries of discourse were very, very narrow. Because the left obviously just controls the boundaries of discourse in our society. Don't get me wrong. There were, and thank God for the internet that, you know, even that's being censored today. But of course, there were voices. But I wanted to create an environment where I could ask the questions that I thought needed to be asked. I wanted to invite the people that weren't being invited anywhere to speak that I believed had the most important thing to say, and to give a perspective that was being marginalized and suffocated.
From Page Magazine, that's, again, as I said at the beginning, it's been a huge influence on me. My journey on Islam has been over the last 15, 16 years, and more recently Front Page Magazine has played a key part in that. And I think I read somewhere it was described as one of the top five most informative conservative publications available today. That's a lot of responsibility on you as the managing editor. Can I just ask you a little bit more about that role? And again, what your aims and responsibilities are in bringing forward a message of, I guess, freedom and hope using Front Page Magazine?
Well, thank you very much. Front Page Magazine is a think tank. Some could call it a battle tank. We fight the war at home and abroad in the sense of defending America from its enemies. And its enemies are abroad. But as we very well know, the enemies are also within. And this is the Unholy Alliance that David Horowitz is an expert on. He wrote the book Unholy Alliance and many other books, including his recent one, Enemy Within. But I dedicated my life to fighting the left. I was writing a script many years back, 15 Tips on How to Be a Good Leftist. And I was writing a satire. And I was sharpening my skills on how the left thinks. And at that time, David Horowitz's memoir came out, Radical Son. And I just grabbed the book. I read it. You know, I had heard of David Horowitz. I read the book, sharpened my thinking on it, But I was so moved by his book that I wrote him a letter. And right before I sent the letter, I thought, oh, my script, I just printed it up. And I put the script inside the envelope and sent it off. And it was just more of a little bit of a coincidence that I had written it, but I just wanted to tell him what a great guy he was. And a couple of weeks later, I got a phone call. One of the most exciting phone calls in my life. And it was David Horowitz. And and we took it from there. I became a columnist. I became an editor. David Horowitz is a former leftist. He was inside the belly of the beast. And he came out of there. And so he knows what the left is better than anyone, or he's one of the people that knows it better than most people. And he dedicated his life to fighting one of the most evil ideas in the world. And how much respect I have for this man, because that's my cause as well. And it's a great honor and what a privilege to be on the front lines with one of the greatest heroes, in my opinion, in history and in the last century and this century, because this is an evil idea. It's diabolical. It produces satanic, diabolical things in its earthly incarnations. And Front Page is the place, is the magazine that exposes the left and its agendas and how it aids and abets our enemies. And, I think what's happening in Afghanistan right now is a pretty good testament to that. But David Horowitz, great man, and a great honor to work alongside him at Front Page.
I'm wondering how you as someone who maybe see things a little bit differently, you talked about your background, for your parents' background, Russian. You've mentioned Canadian influence. And does that help you see things a little bit differently maybe than other commentators in the States?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, certainly, I think definitely being the child of coming from a totalitarian background, coming from a place where we know what the left creates, because the person here that supports a leftist idea, when you support a leftist idea, your hands are already in the blood of the victims of those that your ideas produced. Mm. That's why they called the Khmer Rouge Sartre's children, because the killing fields were choreographed by leftist Parisian intellectuals in France's universities. And so that gives me a perspective in terms of being from that environment, being the child of two great people who fought against the earthly incarnations of Marxist ideas. Canada, perhaps also. Absolutely. I mean, love the country. It's my home. Also free society, just like the United States, although I'm not sure how much freedom remains anymore. But one thing that might have been a little different is there was a lot of anti-Americanism in Canada. Mm. And I don't mean all, but many Canadians, they have that disease. Their nationalism, Canadian nationalism, is actually anti-Americanism. It's a little brother complex. And we're not like them. And we have, you know, we're so friendly and we have good Medicare. And we're not like them because of this and like this and like this. And it's actually nauseating, because for a person that having escaped the Soviet Union, I love America. And thank God for the United States and a lot of these leftist Canadians and Canadian nationalists. I was always wondering, you know, you should be happy you have the United States as a neighbor, as opposed to the kind of neighbor that Ukraine had, you know, and that Poland had. Mm. And studying anti-Americanism has been one of the epicenters of my life. And so that's a little bit part of the story. But love the country. And like I said, it's my home. I'm grateful that it gave us a home and a great life. But as we know, very troubling things are happening there now.
No, completely. And certainly for, as you mentioned, Canada, north of the border there, we're all, I think our viewers, whether they're Christians or not, will be praying that we see the back of Trudeau in a couple of weeks. And it's all looking quite positive. Do you follow Canadian politics a lot, or is your complete focus on what's happening in the US?
No, I follow everything and everyone. And of course, I follow Canada. Directly concerns me on a lot of levels. Hmm. But what's happening there, just like what's happening in Australia or what's happening everywhere, this is the testing ground for the cabal, for the deep state, for the globalists and what they're doing. And they've put their people into power over the years and over the decades. And they got a very good, faithful man in charge in Canada now. You know, you just study his background. Take a look at who his brother is, Sasha. Take a good, close look. Take a look at who his dad was, what he tried to do. Take a look at the philosophy of Justin Trudeau, everything he does and he's dedicated to. So if you want to destroy freedom, you want to destroy liberty under the camouflage of creating a very safe planet, then they're doing a good job.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think having you on, I wanted to look at the big issues America faces and looking at the programs you do, the interviews you do, even just looking at your Twitter feed, there is a huge wealth and range of issues which you tackle and touch on. But I think for me, the big issues certainly that the US faces are weak leadership in Biden, zero media scrutiny of the agenda on the left, I think a resurgence literalist Islam or realist Islam or true Islam, whichever you want to say, in the Middle East with the events in Afghanistan, I think, a power-hungry China and what that means for the West. And then, of course, in the middle of all that, you have COVID restrictions being adopted by governments, even though governments on the right seem to be excited and power-hungry on the desire and the ability to take freedoms away from ordinary individuals. So there are those five. So maybe we can just touch on them, each of them, a couple of minutes. And I think the first one, weak leadership in Biden. Do you want to give us your thoughts on that?
Well, weak is a very good word, and it's the beginning of a book with many chapters. And definitely weakness is part of the story, Peter. I would expand that. I would expand that. Because when we study the left, you know, there's a lot of people that say, oh, they're just, people think that they're just a little bit naive and they want to build a nice world. They want the same things we do. They just have a different way of getting there, you know? When you study the left and you figure out what the left is, and you study Lenin's killing fields, you study Stalin's killing fields, you study Mao's killing fields, you study North Korea, what's happening there, you study what happened in South Vietnam and Cambodia and in Laos, study what Castro did, study what the Sandinistas did. I mean, I could go on. What kind of a person would want to do that all over again? And so malice is another word that we can add to this. Destructive hate. And so, yeah, they're weak. But a lot of people shy away from thinking like this because they don't want to know reality. They want to be willfully blind. But yeah, it's weakness. It's weakness in a spiritual sense that you've gone over to the other side, because there's malice, and this is all intentional. It's not a coincidence that Jimmy Carter pulled the rug under the feet of the Shah, which led to the Ayatollah Khomeini taking over. It's not a surprise what Obama did in so many realms, whether, you know, aiding and abetting the terrorists that are, you know, were and are hurting Israel and all the other things he's done. To have an American president that's opened up the southern border while sending back Cuban refugees and Cubans escaping that monstrous reality and sending them back into the Castro's killing fields. You know, what's happened in Kabul? Completely intentional. They want to destroy the United States. They want to destroy its credibility, destroy its international power. And it is no coincidence that there are tens of thousands of Afghans coming into the United States now. And I think one could be a bit concerned about who these people are, and if they believe in Sharia or not. And everybody in England is one place that knows the consequences of developments like that.
Oh, yes, we certainly do. And what's happening in the UK, that the States isn't far behind what's happening here. But it was curious why that with weak leadership in the US, with the Democrats hell-bent on pressing that destruction button for U.S. society and culture. I'm wondering, is it simply a hatred of Trump, or is it something worse? Just that self-loathing that the Democrats as a whole seem to have for their own nation and their own freedoms. Where does that come from? Is that just a passing thing, or is that part of what the Democratic Party has become?
It's what the Democratic Party has become. In terms of Trump and that derangement syndrome, you know, if you watched very carefully, I remember I was on this flight one time, there's this woman next to me, and we just talked a little bit, but I I just deciphered that she was a leftist. And not a moderate one at that. So I just evacuated the conversation. And I was watching Fox or whatever I was watching. She was watching MSNBC on the, you know, little seat in front of her. And there were clips of Trump coming on. And she would like, there was like a physical kind of, she couldn't even contain herself. And I remember thinking, you know, this is like the possessed individual when they begin shaking when the priest comes in with the holy water.
Yeah.
You know, and there's some kind of possession there. And I'll just say this, that they had Obama for so many years. All the leftist doctrines, all that evil stuff that the left wants to do, and they had it. And they believe they're entitled to power. And they were doing it. They were doing it. They were destroying America. They were building that perfect world where everybody's going to hold hands. Mm. Then we know what happens after that. We know what happens when you try to build paradise on earth. And when you think that you can get back to Eden on your own without God, the 20th century taught us what that's about in Colima and in the Gulag. And you see, and I'm in no way am I saying that Trump was any kind of angel, but Trump represented the end. They thought they had it in the bag with Hillary. All of a sudden, you have a president that's for liberty, individualism, for the American dream, a person that blocked what the deep state and what the left wanted to do. And also, there are people around Trump that are evangelical Christians, that are conservative Jewish people. And around Trump, that whole aura is the Ten Commandments, okay, is the Bible. And when you have people that believe that they're God and they can do whatever they want in their life, sexually, whatever they're doing in their private lives, whatever they're doing in their lives, and they are accountable to nobody, and they want somebody to pat them on the back for certain ways that they live, and they hate the idea of conscience and of Jesus Christ and of morality, you're going to hate that person. So, you know, overall, the left was projecting something very dark in itself, because Trump represented and represents a lot of light and a lot of beautiful things and the American dream. And like I said, perhaps he's not the greatest saint in the world, but we know that when we read the Bible, God didn't always use saints to achieve his purposes. And definitely there's a Trump derangement syndrome where they just can't contain themselves because of their leftist ambitions and what they want. And also he fought back, Peter. You see, this is the problem and why David Horowitz is such a hero. See, most conservatives, they want to be nice. They've got the bow tie on. They're just going to trim their lawns, keep their lawns really clean and beautiful and have a nice barbecue. And they want to be nice, like Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney in that debate with Obama, that third debate on American foreign policy, where he should have just tore into him on Benghazi. But he wanted to be the nice guy. And that's how conservatives lose, because the left is fighting 24/7. The left engages in personal destruction, and they're fighting those Alinsky-style tactics. That's why they took over Hollywood. That's why they took over academia. That's why they took over the media, the higher literary culture. The left took over everything because they fight and conservatives are nice. And they shy away from David Horowitz style tactics. But you see, Trump fought back and was very good at it. And I liked his mean tweets, actually, because he fought back. And the left can't handle it when conservatives fight back.
Yeah, when I want an interesting conversation, I'll put on my MAGA hat and go out. And normal human beings, they manifest in strange ways, as you said. we talked about weak leadership, and also you've got weak media in the US. You've got a failure of the media to properly scrutinize the agenda of the left. I've seen a few cracks in that, simply because can anyone still hold their hands up and say that Biden is a good president? The media seem to be changing, and they seem to be calling him out for failures. I don't know if that is a change in the media, or you still think they will still fail to do their job and to scrutinize the left.
That's a very good question, Peter. And you've hit on a fascinating, very complicated phenomenon, because the left is totalitarian, but it's also suicidal. And so we know, with the killing fields in under Stalinism, the Mao's Cultural Revolution, see, the killing fields, they begin to take on a life of their own. See, they kill the kulaks, and they kill the, you know, the anti-revolutionary, you know, bad people and all that. But then when they run out of them, they begin to devour their own. So that's a very interesting process to see how this will go. So in general, the media is in the pocket of the left. We know that. And it's always been the establishment media. Of course, there's heroes from Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, and Sean Hannity to you. There are heroes, and there are little spheres where we carve out, where we can tell the truth. But in general, as we know, the establishment media, they do their job. They do their job. And by the way, I'll just say that as a student of the left, you know, I've written United in Hate, Jihad is Psychopath. So I study the left 24/7. So I read leftist literature and study leftists. And that's my other problem with a lot of conservatives. Like on social media, I'll say, Don Lemon just said this. And somebody will write, I don't watch that. And it's like, oh my God. Like they just don't get it. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a sphere to where we don't watch. I get that. We ignore, don't watch, don't give them power. There's a certain amount of people who shouldn't do that. But don't forget that we need watchdogs. And we don't, winning culture war is not putting your head in the sand. We don't give up terrain. We have to watch what they're doing, watch what they're saying, fight them at every turn. And so I just wanted to say that I am getting around to your question. I apologize that I can be long-winded, and sometimes it looks like I'm going somewhere else. But the puzzle comes together, hopefully, when I speak most of the time, I hope. But my point is, I've been watching leftist media for many years because I'm a student of the left. And I was nauseated throughout my life, absolutely, having to do this. Absolutely. It's very difficult to read satanic literature, right? So, but in the last few years, ever since Trump got in, it's more and more difficult, because it's almost like just the derelicts and homeless. I don't mean about all homeless people, but I just mean you have a crazy homeless derelict on the street that's just screaming and yelling while he's walking down the street. That's what CNN and MSNBC have become. It's like, it's almost beyond unbelievable what you watch, because they've really been taken over by something so sick. And at the same time, I want to say it is believable, because I'm being rhetorical. It's very believable because we know what the left is, but let's just put it this way. They're on a new level now. They're on a new level now. And so, very totalitarian. Their agenda has escalated into pure and utter hatred. And I'm wondering how long they keep Biden around.
Yeah.
Because there's new phases to come. But if he's too embarrassing, and he is a pawn to other phases, it's going to be very interesting, because often they'll just, you know, they'll eat their own and get rid of their own. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen here, but their use for him may end very soon.
Obviously, we've talked about the left, and then there is this unholy alliance between the left and Islam, and we've seen what's happened in Afghanistan with a resurgence of the Taliban and a literalist or purist form of Islam. And it's interesting how the left don't know what to make of that. But I wonder what your thoughts are on not necessarily the impact on US and Biden, but the impact on stability in the Middle East with the Taliban now in charge of 35 million people in Afghanistan, and probably the most the best armed terror organization in the world. So that will embolden them. So what are your thoughts on what that means for stability in the region?
Anybody that studies the left and knows the left's history knows the left is in ecstasy when the enemies of the United States and of freedom win. Just study who helped and aided the coming to power of Ayatollah Khomeini, the left's romance with Khomeini, and then, as we know, the thousands of the leftists that went to go help build the paradise in Iran were extinguished by Khomeini's killing fields. So that's also my expertise or my attempt to understand. You know, I'm a student ultimately, but I'm saying that what I studied throughout my life is these fellow travelers that want to build these utopias, the leftists that went to Russia for, you know, to build communism were slaughtered, and they went to China and they were slaughtered, you know. So these fellow travelers that have this romance with these totalitarian entities. So we, you know, what's funny is where are the feminists right now? Where are the leftist gays? Where are, you know, where's the left in terms of what's happening in Afghanistan? Well, we know where they are, because their politics ultimately is not about people. The left uses these agendas of women's rights just to destroy their own society. If they cared about women's rights, we know what they would be doing, right? We know what side they would be on in terms of, they say that almost a million victims in England over a decade or two in terms of the Muslim rape gangs there. Where are the leftist feminists on that? So we know that the left, you know, I documented in United in Hate the ecstasy with which the left responded with to what happened at 9/11. For them, it was just the backlash of the oppressed and the poor and the downtrodden. Oh, it was the resurgence of the Soviet Union for many leftists. I mean, they really believed that 9/11 were the chickens coming home to roost, and they really celebrated that. And in their hearts, they're celebrating. You know, we know what side they were on during the Cold War. And we know that this is all deliberate. You know, the left has armed the Taliban now, the credibility that they've shattered for America, the credibility that they've given here to the Taliban. And I have documented the left, the unholy alliance, as David Horowitz has also done. But I've shown the left's alliance with Islamic supremacism. And they have a romance with jihad. And so they're definitely very happy about the Taliban taking over. Absolutely. They may try to camouflage it, but we know that they're happy with that. In terms of the Middle East overall, just like Khomeini gave so much credibility and inspiration to jihad throughout the world, the Taliban's victory is doing the same and will do the same, because the great Satan has been defeated and humiliated, which makes Biden and the left very happy. And this will inspire jihad and jihadists around the world.
Another takeover we're seeing is further east, and that's China. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that, whether that's inevitable, that rise of, I guess, a form of capitalism which doesn't have any regard at all for the individual. It's purely about profit, and the rights of the individual are nothing in the midst of that. And we've had Jack Pusevich on before talking about what's happened in his concern. But what are your thoughts? Or is the West taking it seriously enough? And is there anything that can be done to curb the ambition of China?
Well, I mean, there's some people in the West maybe taking it seriously, but the people in power in the West are taking it very seriously in terms of aiding and abetting our enemies. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know where to begin with China. I'll just say maybe it's not a coincidence that everywhere we look, it's China. Mm. You know, so you know, the COVID-19 lockdowns, all of a sudden there's this Wuhan laboratory and it's China. The mass surveillance system.
Yeah.
That's such an influence in terms of where we're headed. What's the role model? The Chinese mass surveillance system in terms of what they're doing with, you know, the passport phenomenon. But definitely, and also, of course, communism. But as you correctly and wisely say, how communism comes, because it could come in different forms. It could come from a brutal kind of capitalistic structure in part. But look, we thought the Soviet Union was a great threat. In my opinion, that's a very complex issue because it didn't really disappear. Because Putin and his gang, this is still the KGB, and this is still a threat to Western democracy and freedom. And now we have also the Chinese communists, a very strong rising superpower, absolutely. Which, by the way, I mean, when they look at Taiwan and start thinking about what they want to do, you think that they've been scared now after what they've seen happen in Kabul? And you got to wonder, there was this video, White House video. I'm still a little bit so disoriented. I don't even know how to describe it. There's some kind of feminine guy dressed in a weird way, prancing around the White House. And that was a very famous video. Yeah. And Saki was in it at the end, I think, or whatever. Do you think the Taliban were absolutely terrified and cowering under their covers watching that video about the threat that the United States represents to them? The same with China. The United States has become a laughingstock on the world stage, thanks to Biden. That's exactly what they wanted to do. And absolutely, a growing superpower like China, major, you know, threat to freedom in the world, not just to Taiwan. And I think they've gotten the message now of what they want to do when they want to do it.
The final threat we mentioned earlier on, I think, are the restrictions, the COVID restrictions that we are facing all across the world. And we were told, don't worry, we need these for a while until we get vaccines, until we get herd immunity, until. But it does seem as though a number of countries want to keep them in place. And the destruction that's causing on livelihoods, on economy, but also the removal of people's freedoms and civil liberties. And most governments seem to be pushing ahead with that, irrespective of the damage. And I wonder what your thoughts are. Is this the end of personal, individual freedoms and privacy? Are we entering something very dark, or may it just be a passing thing and governments realize they cannot, I mean, the use of fear has been powerful to restrict people. I'm wondering, will we see coming out the other side, or is this the new normal that we all now have to face?
Well, Peter, I'll begin by saying that in terms of what will unfold, with humility, we have to say we don't know. In the sense that Hitler rose and did a lot of evil, but the good guys won after all that destruction that this evil man perpetrated. You know, there was Stalin, but then all of a sudden there was Khrushchev, and then a softening. And then in many respects, you know, Gorbachev brought in freedom to a totalitarian system. And, you know, many Russians got to go back to see their family. And so there's these phases of you know, the evil despotism, but then the good guys might win. So in the Second World War, the good guys won, right? So so we know, and also as a Christian, we have to be realistic, but we also don't know the time and the place of Jesus's return. So we know that something very evil is happening. And as Christians who believe in the Bible, we do know that there will be a phase of the Antichrist time where the evil power does take over the planet. And we have to be honest and faithful about that. We know we've already won in Christ's death and resurrection, and we know that he comes back and that he, I hope I don't use, you know, bad expressions, but he's going to kick some butt. And so we've already won with him. So, but I'm just being honest in terms of what I'm seeing is that some kind of very evil mass surveillance system, beast-like system is being set up in the world, and it doesn't look good in terms of getting a way back. We pray for it. It may happen because we don't know how the Lord works and how some things will play out, but it looks very bad, and Christians and also Jewish people, we may not believe in the same Messiah, but there is an overlapping of that. We do understand that the world will end up, you know, with the prediction, prophecies of Daniel, etc., that coincide with Revelation, that there will be a beast-like system for a certain period. Just want to say quickly, and I always apologize that sometimes people say, well, what is he talking about? You know, he was asked this, but he's talking about this. And I get that, and I'm sorry. But there is sometimes a little method to my madness. So just a few puzzles I want to put together here. The left hates God's creation. This is a spiritual battle. The left hates freedom. It hates individualism. It hates the hierarchy that comes with God's creation as well. And so this whole thing that it's creating heaven on earth, equality and all this, the left likes to make themselves gods. They're gods. They don't need God, right? It's very important to understand that the yearning for equality in the left is really a yearning for equality after death as well. They hate the idea of God's judgment of the Ten Commandments. Because God's judgment, ultimately, there is no equality there. Because when God's judgment comes, you may be accountable for how you lived. And the left hates that notion. So this is a spiritual war against God's will on earth, but also God's will in heaven. The left hates the idea of conscience, of shame, of the Ten Commandments, etc. So it wants total equality in the sense that it can wipe out the concept of sin and the consequences for those things. Now, just I'll try to make this quick. So there's a spiritual battle here, and you have to understand that in Genesis, when God says, let us make man in our own image, that's another mystery. That's another five-hour show, but could be a reference to the Trinity, et cetera, et cetera. But one thing that we know there is that there is an image of God that we've been created in because he made us in his image. We see each other, we see God's image, Peter, in our faces, not necessarily in our elbow or our knee. How do we see God's creation in our faces? In whose interest is it that we don't see God's creation? There might be a reason why a certain entity wants to put masks on human faces. There might be a reason why when Luciferians engage in their rituals, they stand 6 feet apart and have masks on. So I'm sorry if I bring any kind of discredit to your show, because people like me who talk about these things just now are considered crazy when you talk about the devil and this and that and this and that. But I can only speak the truth because I'm a believer in Jesus Christ, and we know that there's a spiritual battle here. And so something is definitely taking over. Their code word is safety. And those of us who believe in God believe that you have to live life and live it. You can't live life fearing to die because death comes. And so this all gets back to the Garden of Eden when the devil told Eve that, you know, eat this, you'll have full knowledge, you'll live forever, et cetera, et cetera. It's interconnected with what's happening now because, oh, somebody might die. Shut everything down. We can all commit suicide and then nobody will get COVID. So you have to think about what they're doing. They're trying to erase the risk and the reality of mortality. And there's a spiritual thing there. And in the name of giving everybody safety and security, as we know, you can create fascism and communism very easily. But yes, it's looking bad because there's phases here. So they did this and that. They lied about everything, as we know. You know, now I like to say to the fully vaccinated, you know, stop being so selfish. Start getting those booster shots every month. But you see, the vaccine passport, that's just a stage to the passport. They want the passport. Okay, they had the magic virus. By the way, I'm not saying it's not real. I'm just saying it's magical in the sense that it helps to get here, right? And then back to China. Because they're going to get rid of cash. And if everybody knows what the deep state's been up to after all these years, just go do your research. But they want to put a chip in everybody. And then we have the mass surveillance system.
I could pick up on so many, but I won't, because as you said, it will go into many, many other shows. Jimmy, thank you so much for your thoughts and your input. Again, I put the details down the bottom where people can find you. And certainly I've enjoyed your recent interview with Laura Loomer. I know you did one recently with Mike Lindell. You've got many others, and I know our viewers will find all of those interesting. So I encourage them to head over to Rumble. And I know that you're part of this fight back, this conservative fight back. And I think it has really seen success and using the alternative media sources that are available. And I think the more the big tech trans silence, the more the message seems to get out with other alternatives. So thank you for what you do. And Rumble is certainly one of those platforms to get out, or people can just go directly to the website and find everything there. So thank you, Jimmy, for coming on. Thank you for sharing your thoughts on that. And yeah, thank you. Can I just finish off with our viewers before I let you go? Our viewers, thank you so much for watching. This is a pre-record done a few days before it comes to you, so you'll be able to watch on all the normal places, plus on Rumble, BitChute, and Gab TV, also available on the website, heartsofoak.org/livestream. You can get all the videos up there. And if you haven't subscribed to the weekly email, then do go to heartsofoak.org and click on that Connect tab, and you can get the weekly email. So thank you for watching, and thank you for listening. For those of you listening on Podbean, on any of the audio apps, it's been picking up more and more, and we're getting good feedback from you. So thank you for that. Any comments you have, drop us an email, info@heartsofoak.org. And I think that's about it. So, Jimmy, thank you once again for your time. And I'd encourage people to go subscribe to the website, and they will get updates from you. And yeah, certainly Front Page Magazine, as I said, has been one of my big sources of information and my understanding on Islam. So thank you for that. And on that, I think I'll wish our viewers a wonderful evening, and we look forward to seeing you very soon. So thank you very much, and good evening.
Thank you for listening. Censorship is real. To sign up for our weekly email and find links to all of our platforms, go to heartsofoak.org. Please like, subscribe and share. And in the words of Churchill, keep buggering on.